This session applies to anybody who relates to younger children, grandparents, parents, uncles, aunts, teachers, and anybody who it seems that in today's world, more than ever, there's a need to give serious attention about how preschool children develop. There, for whatever reason, there seem to be many trends or forces at work that keep them from developing in healthy ways like they once did. There's a handout for this if you want to help yourself here on the front bench. There's a two-page handout. And so as we think of this, the handout actually is a resource list for you, and I will not be talking about everything on that list, but I will kind of be calling attention to some things in order. And so what I have on the first page is some general things on discipline, emotional, social, moral, spiritual development, and we'll start with that. And so under the discipline of a child, when we think of discipline, I'm thinking of the word disciple. When you disciple somebody, you encourage, you train, you teach, you direct. It's a very broad term that has to do with walking with a person and training that person to be what they ought to be. And one of the critical things is to train children to be willing rather than willful. When a child is willful, he wants things to be the way he wants them to be just because he wants them to be that way at that time. And when a child is willing, he not only goes along with what he's asked to do, but he actually does it with a will. And my illustrations here, you can kind of tell that two of them are different from the other two. I won't insult your understanding by asking you which are which there. But the willful child might actually want to do what you ask him to do, but not now because you asked him to do it. If you would ask him to do it some other time, maybe he'd be willing to, but not now. It might be something, it's just amazing how hard it can be to take that last bite off the plate, to eat the last pea. You eat all but that, even though there's plenty of room left in your stomach for the dessert. And what I'm talking about here is things, I'm not sure who's going to do it, but if the school doesn't do it, sometimes it doesn't happen. Excellent topic for a parent-teacher meeting. Many families have preschoolers also, but if parents with their oldest children are not yet in school, somewhere, sometime, somebody ought to share some of these ideas with them. And because children will grow up, they will develop habits, whether you are aware of it or not. Model expected behavior. Children learn behavior, and behavior is learned and becomes habitual, and there's so many kinds of behavior. Whether it's how you sit at the table when the prayer is made, or whether it's there are habits of, for example, whining or complaining is actually a habit that a child can develop. And they can be trained to not be whining or complaining. And many times with a child, it works from the outside in. That is, if you train them to do certain things in certain ways, it ends up affecting the heart. Whereas when they get older, they may understand more. You might explain some things, and then they might have more of a heart-driven behavior. But with very young children, they very much operate on their feelings and their habits. And so you've got to train those habits. And so just a few more things on this list. Be consistent. Teach them that no means no. And let me show you another example here of training children. A child can be trained to look adults in the eye. You know, it's kind of a tendency for many children to kind of want to hide behind the mother's apron or hang on to daddy's leg and not say their name when you ask their name, not hold out that hand and shake hands. It's not really about shaking hands. When you train a child to do something as simple as holding out her hand and shaking hands and looking at the person and saying hello, there's something going on there that's much bigger than the handshaking. It's submission, it's acceptance, it's following parents' direction, there's an emotional development, a social development, and some of these things seem to be very small, but they're actually huge. And many times, if you pick out a couple things and do them well, they have an impact far beyond that particular thing. Just as in the classroom, for example, you might ask the child to push in the chair when he walks away from his desk. Just that's one example of something teachers sometimes have their students do. And a few orderly things like that that you require bleeds over and affects other areas of the child's life. They tend to be orderly in other ways also. The flip side is also true. If you allow disorder and disrespect, for example, if you allow them to speak out without raising their hands when they should raise their hand, well, that tends to bleed over and affect other areas also. Teach the child that no means no. That's number 5 there on the list. No means no, not no because. I'll talk a bit more about that later, I think. Another one is seek to understand age-appropriate behavior. I came across this delightful little article a few years ago in one of the Pathway publications called The Difference. When my 10-year-old son rigs an upside-down 55-gallon drum above the chicken house to provide water for his chickens and thereby saves himself a job, he's a boy. When he promises his 5-year-old sister a pack of Smarties if she waters his calves on a hot summer day, he's lazy. Point here is to recognize, is this simply age-appropriate child behavior that you expect of children? Paul said, when I was a child, I thought as a child, I acted as a child, and when I became older, I put away childish things. And it's appropriate for children to be children, and there is such a thing as childish behavior. But there's also such a thing as behavior that's not really childish, it's inappropriate. It's, for example, laziness. When he quietly takes the largest piece of cake left on the platter, he's a boy. When he insists he needs the first and the biggest piece of cake, he's selfish. When he loudly slurps on his watermelon until his father reminds him he sounds like a cow, he's a boy. When he burps loudly after finishing his watermelon and makes no apology, he's rude. And you know, children can be rude and not know that they're being rude. They need to be taught what rudeness is. Sometimes people will say to a child, didn't anybody teach you your manners? And many times that's actually the case. No, nobody taught them, so they don't have it. They need to be taught. When he makes himself a soap suds beard while washing dishes, he's a boy. When he washes all the dishes and never bothers to get himself a dishcloth to do it with, he's sloppy. When he forgets to study his memory work until the day before it's due, he's a boy. When he does this 4 weeks in a row, he's negligent. And so on. So understand age-appropriate behavior. Well, going on, teaching children responsibility and to be willing, it's giving them a goal. It's amazing how difficult it can be for children to pick up their toys. They can dump it out in a matter of seconds, and putting it back can take, well, it's just hardly, they can hardly do it. But they can be trained to pick them up and to do it and do it well. Oh, here's another. I forgot I had a picture on this. But this idea of no. Children need to know that no means no. And no isn't necessarily a scolding no. It's often just simply directions. When you get to go down the road and the light's red, what that really is really saying to you is, no, you may not cross the intersection now. When it's green, it's saying, yes, go right ahead. Yes, no, yes, no. There's nothing scolding about it. It's just the simple fact. Somebody's giving you directions. And many times in life, whether it's a parent, babysitter, team captain, whoever, when you say no, it's because right now we're not going to do this. And so if you hear no, well, you just, wait, you stop. And now there is a time when no also means no because it really is a bad thing to do. It might be an immoral thing, it might be an unkind thing, or it might be a dangerous thing. For example, touching a hot stove or pushing a key into a receptacle. And so children need to learn no, and they need to learn that when you say no, they stop. And this is something that has I've observed happening more and more in the last decade or so, and that is that parents of young children tend to add this rider onto it. No, because. And then they'll say a because. No, because mommy doesn't want you to do that now, or no, because you might, or no, because she doesn't like that. Now, there's nothing wrong with telling children why they shouldn't do something. But that's just extra information. They may understand it, they might not understand it. But the problem is that it seems that people today, many people, are expecting that if the young child knows why he shouldn't do it, he will therefore not do it, based on his understanding of why he shouldn't. Don't splash in the mud puddle because it'll get your trousers all dirty and then mommy will have to wash them again. Now, oh, okay, I will therefore never splash in the mud puddle again because I understand that. Well, that is not the way children operate. Children operate on their feelings, or they operate by habit. And what often happens is that as children get older then, when they are not developing emotionally and do not follow directions like they should, then when they're 11, 12, 13, parents then try to use just no. And they try to direct them the way they ought to direct a 2 or 3 year old. But now is the age when they should be able to use a little more reasoning. But because they haven't taught them that no means no when they were 2 or 3, then they try to teach them when they're 13 that no means no, and it's kind of late then. Does this make any sense? So there's nothing wrong with saying, no, don't do that because, you know, sister, you know, she won't like that if you do. If you throw your food, if you put food in the floor, then mommy will have to clean it up. You know, assuming that that understanding will keep you from putting food on the floor the next meal. No, you have to train that. No, we don't throw it on the floor. And here's the one picture I had, I forgot about, on the age-appropriate behavior. Expect, when children come to a mud puddle, you expect them to go splishing and splashing through it. That's what children are. Now, of course, if they go too far and start throwing mud pies in each other's faces, that's a different story. But expecting it and being able to deal with it. Teach children expectations. Children really, this is number 7 on your first sheet there. Children like to know what the expectations are. Sometimes parents only point out problems. And I guess you kind of assume all is well unless you get rebuked or scorned. But point out expectations, whether it's something like a list on the wall like this to do chores, or whether it's simply things like staying at the table until you're dismissed or folding your hands, and encourage them and let them know when they've reached your expectations. Many times children, as I alluded to before, we point out when they're not doing what they should do, but let them know when they're doing well. If they say something kind to their sister, you don't have to try to think of it every time, but sometimes point out that the way you helped your little brother there was good. I remember one time within the last year, I was at school over a hot lunch, and there was a visitor there was blind, and he came walking towards the table there, and one of the older students just got right out of his seat and came over and helped him find a chair. And sometime afterward, I had opportunity to just quietly commend him for doing that. And so parents should take opportunity to let your children know when they're doing well. Number 9, remember that the rod and reproof bring wisdom, but don't expect the rod to do it all. You know, there are two extremes. There are parents who try to raise a child without ever using the rod, and then there are those who think that the rod is a panacea for all problems. And if it's not done properly or in the right way, it's not enough. By the way, if you have any questions or comments along the way, just raise your hand and we'll discuss your question. Let's go to emotional development. Children's emotions, they actually operate very much from their feelings and habit, more than from rational reasoning. That statement there, there's a lot to that statement. It's not original with me. But children very quickly go from exhilaration. They're happy. It's a nice day, beautiful day. It's time to go out and romp and play. And then all of a sudden, something happens. Now they're crying. Now they're happy. Now they're sad. Now they're frustrated. And they go back and forth. And that's what children are like. And they also tend to go based on their habits. But teach them to handle their feelings. It's possible to get frustrated, but just because you're frustrated, you don't have to throw a tantrum or start throwing things. And it's possible to be angry because something didn't go your way, but not have to, again, throw a tantrum. Feelings will come. And they need to be taught, they need to be actually trained to handle their feelings properly. Under emotional, children are very emotional, and we should give attention to that. Give them opportunity to care. There are huge benefits for children to have opportunity to both care for something and to be cared for. I tried to find a couple of pictures to illustrate this, but interacting with pets, a child having her own little garden plot. My granddaughter just had a little plot this summer for the first time. She's 5 years old, and just about probably a 6x6 plot with about 8 or 10 plants in it. And I smiled when I saw my daughter-in-law then planting that, because it was really fun to plant it, and I knew that the weeds would come. And sure enough, you know, the tomato plant grew, but so did the weeds. And as the summer wore on, the plot got pretty weedy. And so the experience of caring for something and the realities of weeds, and also interacting with older people, children need to have experiences both of giving care, giving affection, and also receiving affection. Now, one thing to think about with this list I gave you, these papers, what do you do with such things? Well, one thing to do as parents. And by the way, these are not copyrighted. If you want to photocopy any of these and share it with parents or preschoolers, fine. These are simply things I've collected over the years from many sources. And one thing to do is to kind of just look down over this list if you have a child, and you look at one thing and say, yeah, we're fine there, we're fine there. And then you might get to say, I'm not sure. Does my child know how to hop? Well, we'll find out. And sometimes, yeah, all of us have the areas we're strong on and areas we're weaker on. So you can look down over that and see if there are things that you should touch on that maybe you haven't. Also under emotional, if help children to try. If at first you don't succeed, try again. Some of these things I'm talking about are huge when that child comes to school and starts doing some schoolwork and gets frustrated and forgets and isn't sure how to form the letters or hold the pencil or remember the sounds. And if the child was taught at home that when something is difficult, well, you try again and you try again. If you want to skate, why, you don't learn to skate in the first 10 minutes. There's some falling involved. And if they've been taught to try and try, and that's going to be a good foundation for when they come to school. Another one is to encourage thoughtful behavior. Children are very emotional, and that's okay. They are children, and they tend to have a reaction. And you can at least work at helping to think and have thoughtful response. So even though they might feel like saying something unkind or feel like throwing something, at least you work towards helping them to think about how they're going to respond. And so moving on to social development, we think of interacting with other people. Teach responsibility. Give them some chores. Teach them to share. When the cousins come to visit and you share your toys with your cousins, there's something huge going on there, being able, because that's something that's foundational for life, for school. And giving them experiences away from home, going away overnight to Uncle Sam's house, because when you go to school, you're going to be away from home and others in another environment. And children need those experiences of being in other environments and adjusting to life. Encourage various kinds of play. Here's I talked about a list. There's quiet play, looking at a book, playing with beads. Then there's active play. There's the kind of play where you work beside an adult, you stand on the chair and you play as though you're mother's making bread and you have your own little piece of dough there and you're playing with it. That kind of imitative play or participatory play is valuable. And teach them polite expressions, please and thank you. It's amazing. The word please is not all that hard to say. It does have the PL sound, pla, you know, to say pla, and a long please. And thank you isn't really that hard to say. But why is it so hard to say? I remember some years ago after lunch, I think we had, the meal ended either with cookies or maybe we had had a piece of candy at the end of the meal. And my wife told my son, he's to say, please, could I have the candy? And well, he decided he didn't want to say this. And so she said, well, okay. She just laid the candy there on the counter and we finished the meal, and she did the dishes, and he went to play. And she said, whenever you want the candy, just come and say please, and you may have it. And so the afternoon went on, and he was in there playing with his toys. And she heard him in there saying, I can't say please. I can't say please. And after about 30 minutes or so, he came out in the kitchen and said please, and he got his candy. Now, that's an amusing little story, but you know, those little battles are absolutely important in ways far beyond that little piece of candy. Children need to be taught these polite behaviors, and these are all part of that foundational thing if they're not in place when they come to school, the teacher wants to get right into teaching children to read, and she doesn't have time nor the environment to actually teach these graces and these habits and these handling your feelings and so on. Now, it's not to say teachers don't work with that. You continue developing that in school, but you can't counter if children come without them. It makes it very, very difficult, both for the child and the teacher and the other classmates. Going on morally, teach them respect for others and help them practice through good manners. Require obedience. Help them develop hearts of truthfulness. Giving children a few wise sayings, it's amazing how they can provide guidance for life. Well begun is half done. Once a child decides he's going to actually pick up the toys and gets a good start, that's half of it right there. The other half, finishing picking up, is no big deal. It's that getting a good start that is important. And then looking at spiritual development, read Bible stories to your children. Teach them the love of God and answer their questions. Give them opportunities to learn the stories. And don't forget to teach safety skills. It's amazing, especially the oldest child might get taught better than the ones that come along later. And you forget some of these things. I remember our daughter, our fifth child, one evening I was working there in my study and said, suddenly I heard a sound and some of the lights went out, and then she started crying. And she was playing with some keys, on an old key ring that was in the toy box. And I don't know how often she had been doing this, but she was poking them into a receptacle. And this time she decided to try to take two keys and put them in both sides at the same time, and did that. And luckily the circuit breaker tripped, and she did not get shocked. There was a little bit of fire flew, and she was appropriately scared. And so were we as parents, and somewhat rebuked. But you know, it's amazing what you can forget. And children can't teach themselves safety. And it's sad how many children are injured through skid loader accidents, for example, riding on the bucket of a skid loader. Well, there are a number of things, safety skills, hygiene, and the last one on the front side there, avoid excessive stimulation. There's a qualitative difference between the two kinds of toys there. Today, there's such a proliferation of electronic gadgets. And many, many books have been written about the problems associated with children too early and too much being hyper-stimulated by these things with bells and whistles and clicks and buttons and so on. And you just think of the difference between that and the simple kinds of things you can build with, where you're developing vision, you're manipulating something, developing eye-hand coordination and putting things together. So avoid things that provide excessive stimulation. Now, moving to the backside, I have just a list here of elements of readiness. This list on the backside is kind of a complementary to the one on the front side. This is as you think more of the child getting a bit older and being ready for school. What's needed besides the pencil box? Well, a child should be able to listen and follow directions. And can your child follow directions? Can you ask the child to do three or four or five things and say, I'm going to tell you this one time, and you do them all? Take out the garbage, then feed the dog, then put your bike away and close the garage door. And he comes back and you say, now, did you do that? Oh, no, the bicycle is still sitting out there. Well, being able to following directions is the first thing he's going to have to do when he gets to school. The teacher's going to be giving directions to get out your book, take your pencil, and so on. And so listening and being able to sit and listen. Another one is to hear. And this is foundational. There are a number of things that some of these things can be done while you're driving down the road or doing the dishes, just as almost fun things where you think of a word that rhymes with fable and table and able and mabel and heat and seat. When you train them to hear rhyming words, you're actually developing their hearing, because when you get to school and want to teach phonics, the teacher is assuming that the child does in fact hear the sounds. And sometimes if they seem to forget the difference between the ah sound and the ah sound, it could be that they're actually not hearing the difference between the ah sound and the ah sound. And so whether the rhymes or just particular sounds like the sleep and slurp and slide and slam and slither, or the ending sounds like kick and check and wreck. There are ways of just playing with words, whether it's through nursery rhymes or making lists or just enjoying sounds, that help them to explore the world of sounds and develop their reading ability. And let's go to seeing. Seeing differences and likenesses. Putting puzzles together is an excellent, excellent activity for young children, starting with the simple board puzzles to more complicated ones, and then things like working with blocks. And think of this gadget here. I think these are still available, aren't they? eye-hand coordination, and then seeing where that thing fits. A very young child can occupy himself for a while with that. And you compare that kind of activity with giving them some kind of electronic gadget, and the differences are huge, because they really need to be able to see the difference between the shapes, and then they find the piece, and then they turn it the right way, and then they manipulate it and get it in there. Some of these activities are valuable beyond our guess. And then there are concepts, understanding concepts, like up, down, in, out. It's amazing. I've seen children come for first grade readiness already and didn't really get the difference between prepositions. And you might not know it if you don't ask them sometimes. But you can do this as a game. You know, put this beside it, put it on it. Or ask them, is it beside it? Is it in front of it? Is it behind it? Some of these simple concepts. Or you can play with words. And sometimes this happens as parents talk with their children. And so you're working with something and you say, wow, this is really slimy. And children kind of like new words and like big words. Oh, that's slimy. Or this is difficult. here's another example in understanding concepts. And some books or children's magazines have excellent pages like this that make a nice alternative to sitting and reading with a child. But just looking at that picture and asking the child, it depends on how old the child is. And so you can ask them to point to the plant, or you can ask them, is this a plant? No. Is this a plant? Yes. Is this a plant? No. Is this a plant? No. And so on. The animals, vegetables, and trees. And you are training them to see and to think about and to categorize. And it's just grandparents, take note when you sit with your grandchild and look at something. This is the kind of thing that helps develop the child's understanding. Teach a child to speak clearly and to maybe recite something. Teach them to, that's one of the values of poetry with young children. Nursery rhymes, jingles, and so on. 20 froggies went to school down beside a Russian pool. Teach them to think as you read a story. Maybe you stop partway through the story and ask, what do you think they will do next? What do you think? And give the child a chance to think of it all. Why do you suppose they said that? Why do you think he jumped? What would you do if you were in this situation? And just get him to think. Teach the child to adapt to changes. This is a huge one. Teachers will bless parents who train their children that when it's time to do something, we're prepared to do it. It's time to put your books away now and get out your math books. And some children, they want to finish this first. Well, there'll be time this afternoon to do that. Or maybe it's time to play a game. The game is over. He won. Let's play another. When children play games at which somebody's going to win or somebody's going to lose, there's something important going on there emotionally and socially. There's such a thing as winning a game. That's kind of what games are about. And so only one person wins. And so the game's over. Now let's do it again. And we don't throw a tantrum. We don't quit. And so on. And here's another one where children need to know that there's an appropriate time to ask for help. And you should also be willing to accept help. Whether it's tying a knot in a string or finding how this piece of puzzle fits, because when you get to school, there are going to be things that you need help for. That's kind of what school's about. You will be given problems that you can't solve. And it's important to be able to accept help and not just stuff in your desk or tear up the paper. Playing is a huge one also. Playing has various aspects to it. One is cooperative play with other people, being able to give and take. We'll play your game, the game you picked, it's not the one I picked. We will play together. And also play a variety of activities. In today's world where there's a tendency for people, for children at younger and younger ages to, I'll say, get sucked into electronic stuff and want to play electronic type games, the gross motor skills of running and jumping and catching a ball and pitching and using a hula hoop or frisbee, those skills that they develop in playing are very important. And it's important for a child to have the experience of mastering something. When you learn something, like it could be something as advanced as juggling with older children, but with younger children, when you learn to catch a ball, you can actually throw this thing up and catch it again when it comes down. Or maybe throw it up and run ahead a little bit and catch it, or throw it against the wall and have it come back and catch it. There's something about mastering a skill that's not only important physically, it's also important just emotionally and developmentally to have something or some things that you can do well. Teach them to work, to be able to follow directions when they are asked to do something and to develop a certain amount of perseverance. Helping to pull weeds in the garden with children is often not nearly as much about getting the weeds pulled as it is about developing character. And it helps them for life. Teach them the joy of experiencing success with a task completed. The garden is free of weeds. And then I have a list of activities on the next page to develop readiness. So if parents wonder, these lists kind of overlap. The list I just went over is kind of by categories of types of things. This last list now is just a list of practical things to do. If there's one single thing you give to parents, it's read. Read to your children. Here's a picture of my wife reading to some of our grandchildren, siblings, they're actually siblings, of different ages. And notice that different children of different ages interact in different ways. There's something emotional going on here, there's something informative, and each one of a different age. But there's something very valuable about reading to them. And then conversation along the way. That is, while you're doing dishes, you know, the Deuteronomy talks about teaching your children when you're rising up or sitting down, But taking these little teachable moments while you're doing routine things like washing dishes. Sometimes you might sing, sometimes they just chit-chat, other times you might play some kind of a game, a rhyming game. Not that you do this all the time, you're not making school out of it, but the point is, these are the times that are very formative, and literally it might be when you're traveling down the road too. You're going down the road and you notice somebody doing something in the field. You teach your children to observe things or to think about things or ask questions about things along the way. Another one would be to actually teach the child something. If you're planting something, you can actually talk about such things as roots and stems, and particularly if it's a cross-generational thing. Practice nursery rhymes, word sounds. When children say these things like the hickory dickory dock, the mouse went up the clock, there is really something important happening. They're actually learning to hear sounds, move their lips, produce sounds, and if they don't do that, why, they often have difficulty in later years with either pronunciation or learning to read. Practice storytelling. Encourage them to tell a story. Now, you tell. You know, children like to hear stories over and over. And sometimes you can say, no, you tell. You tell the story of the little red hen. And with the why questions, answer according to the age level. ask some questions of your own. And you might ask questions. Now, it depends on who you are. I'm the type of person who would tend to ask a question something like this. This is probably a man question rather than a woman question. But why does the dishcloth get wet when we dry the dishes? And then why does the dishcloth, when we hang it up on the wall, get dry when it hangs? And just a few questions like that can stimulate the child to think. The mailman brings the mail. Where do you suppose he gets it? How do those crickets make that noise? Where do they get it? Here's another valuable activity when you come across these. Having children find these. Tremendous value in these little hidden pictures. They're learning to discriminate. I could talk a long time about this, but we don't have the time. But to find the umbrella over here, learning to not be distracted by the other things, being able to see something when it's upside down, that's a very valuable kind of activity for children to develop and stand them in good stead when they come to school. Another one is memory games, these little the pairs of cards. It's amazing how young children can be, and they remember. They can often do that better than we can, remembering where the apples are, and then they flip them over. And then simple things like sorting, taking an old egg carton and having them sort things by shape or color or size, whether it's beads or stones. And also seeing patterns, something as simple as stringing up some beads, and then you give them one, or they can do it themselves. They string five at random, and then they're supposed to make another set just like that. Blue, purple, and so on, and make it like that. Or maybe it's according to shape and size. Seeing patterns, reproducing patterns. This is fun for children, but it's more than fun. It's also developing skills of discrimination and order and pattern. All of these are foundational for later in life. And then building things like Legos or actually with a hammer and saw, or tracing something, coloring the coloring book, playing with finger paint, sidewalk chalk, all of these. There's so much variety. Children should not get into a rut. There should be experience a variety of things. And then following directions. The old game of Simon Says is a very valuable game for children. They must focus, they must be alert, and do it if Simon says, and not do if he didn't say it. And they're developing something there neurologically and socially. Teach them time concepts, days of the week, morning and evening, and seasonal, spring, summer, fall. Use your imagination. Put down some numbers on the sidewalk or some cardboard numbers and step on the numbers. I'm on two here. What do you suppose I get if I add two to it? Well, we go one, two, and now we're on four. Just make a game out of it. That's, of course, age appropriate when they get a bit older. Teach them cardinal things like, or the ordinal numbers, first, second. And along the way, if you eat cold cereal, on the cereal box, there are letters, there are words. You can point out letters. I see an R. Can you find the R? Can you see the E? And don't forget to memorize. Have them do some memory work of songs, little rhymes, sayings, scripture. And your first grade teacher will bless you if you teach your children to match a tone. Oh, can you sing? Oh. What's the difference between singing and speaking? If I say hickory dickory dock or hickory dickory dock, how do you know the difference between singing and speaking? Sing along with a recording. Sing together. Encourage singing. And develop large motor skills. There's so many opportunities with things like a jump rope, learning to swing, to hop, skip, jump, riding toys. Develop fine motor skills before they come to school. Use the scissors, cut, paste, manipulate objects. And that brings us to the end. So there, that whole host of activities, they really are the foundation. And if children have those varieties of skills developed and they come to school, they'll have the foundation in place, and then they're ready to learn to read because they can hear sounds, they can appreciate words, and so on. Any questions, comments? Thank you. We have a break now until, I think, 3:45, if I have it correct. Yeah, actually, it's till 3:45. Yeah, that's what's on the schedule this year. So.